People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And I wonder if you know that The Mousetrap, Agatha Christie's extraordinary play, is coming back to the Theatre on the Bay for December and January, opening on the 5th of December and closing on the 19th. A large cast, great secrets, and an irresistible play. I think it might be in its 65th year. And one of the characters is Mrs. Boyle, who is going to be played by none other than Michelle Maxwell. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Michelle Maxwell as my guest on People of Note this week. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you so much. Would you mind if I said that we end on the 19th of January?
Oh.
In case people think we've got a 1 week run.
Did I say the 19th of December?
No, you just said to the 19th, unless I'm mistaken.
Oh, right. No, the 19th of January. So it's nice. Well, it's a fairly good run, isn't it?
It's a good run.
Right across Christmas and New Year with all the visitors down here. So, Michelle, welcome is what I was going to say.
Thank you so much.
It's very good to see you here after having known you for a while and seen you perform and all sorts of things. So here you are in this whodunit, the whodunit of whodunits. Would you agree?
I would agree. I've never seen it, which is why I'm so loving working on it.
Have you not seen it?
Never, no.
Okay.
Well, I might have been in London. I might have been all over anywhere in the world. I didn't miss it.
Tell me a little bit about your role, Mrs. Boyle.
Mrs. Boyle.
Oh, like that, is it?
Yes. Well, she is. Well, at the moment, it's only into the second week of rehearsal. She may change. But at the moment, she's really rather like that. And I can't tell you what she did. There's not too much. There's a sort of ethic about this. We're all very humbugashly about what we actually say.
Mm-hmm.
But look, all I can say is that, well, I in my backstory, I've said that her husband had an affair with a younger woman. And so she's rather, she's crotchety and bad-tempered, and I think she's lonely, and she's she deserves more in life, and she's just not getting it. You know?
I wish people could see your face.
Oh, gosh, I wish. I'm so glad I can't.
No, because you were in character there almost,
Michelle.
Well, I did
it for a brief nanosecond.
Yeah. Okay. But as you said, there's a great deal of secrecy around this play. I think I've seen it twice. I've certainly seen it once, but I think twice. And on both occasions, someone comes on the stage at the end and implores the audience not to tell anyone who done it. Is that still going to happen?
It is. It's written in the script.
Oh, really? Is it an instruction?
An instruction.
Gosh.
And as far as I know, everybody has acted. Well, I think they've said something like 95% of audiences around the world. You see, they feel that they've been told to do something.
Yes.
And audiences love to be told to do something. They're in on it. So.
They sort of feel in on it, yes. But
it's
quite a large cast, The Mousetrap, isn't it? And you were telling me this amazing story about M's, the letter M. We have Michelle Maxwell. We have The Mousetrap. And listen to the names of the actors and how many M's you get. Melissa Hayden, Mark Sykes, Matthew Lotter, Michelle, Malcolm Terry, and also one of the other actors playing Mr. Paravicini, Mark Winter. So it's an M play. Was that a sheer coincidence?
Well, I'd never crossed my mind until we got a wonderful introductory email from Jonathan Taffler, our director, and he's got a great sense of humor and bright as a button. And he said, well, of course, I only cast this play because of the M's. The two that aren't M, well, I can't say anything about their characters, but it's very fitting that they are not M's.
Oh, okay, okay. So, as they say, the plot thickens.
The plot thickens.
I'm in the lucky position of not being able to remember who did it. So
oh,
I really can't. So when I go and see it, it's going to come as a surprise to me once again.
Great. You are going to see it,
definitely.
Third time lucky.
I discovered Agatha Christie's books relatively late in life.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, I read about 8 or 9 of hers over a period of a month and was completely riveted by the beautiful use of the language, for example, her beautiful writing. And then there have been those marvelous films, Death on the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express.
Absolutely.
They're irresistible, aren't they?
Always revisited. And, you know, just working through the script, every single character is so interesting.
Mm.
And also, she has a great ear. I wonder if she was musical in any anyway, because her dialogue, it's so good. You can hear even in her punctuation, you know, when you look at a script, mm-hmm. unless it's very modern and there's just not a semicolon or nothing.
Oh, yes.
You know,
but this, I know.
You know, it's almost like the old days of the Tennessee Williams and all those old plays with the punctuation. You really have to have a choice of whether you're going to ride through without a comma where he has one, or if it's there so you can hear the music of the dialogue in her head. Mm-hmm. It's very clever.
And especially for someone like you, that must be very pertinent as a musician. Rhythm, phrasing,
yeah.
all that you would be more aware of possibly than anyone else.
Well, you know, most actors have a musical bone.
Yes, they do.
Somehow they do, actually. I mean, take Mark Winter, for instance. I mean, he started off as a famous pop singer in London, mm-hmm. and now he's just done masses of films and plays.
Yes, he's a big name in this production, isn't he? Mark Winter, Mr. Parravicini.
He was brought over.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Especially for this.
Yes.
It's interesting, Peter Tureen has put it on because Matilda is running here at the Artscape.
Another M.
There you are.
Sorry,
oh, my
Scottish,
goodness,
yes.
Another M. And then this Mousetrap runs simultaneously at Theatre on the Bay for the season. So two massive productions for him.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Now, Michelle.
And we've also got, sorry, Marcel Mayer is doing the costumes.
Oh, I can't believe it.
I have to put that in. It's another M. Yeah.
Good for Marcel. And what a star he is as well.
Yeah, they're extraordinary, those two. Him and Fredo, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Talented, extraordinary.
Now, Michelle, as a musician, singer, jazz artist, cabaret artist, I'm intrigued by your choice. So what's the first piece we're going to listen to?
I thought it would be a good idea to start with Elaine Stritch, you know, the fabulous Sondheim leading lady and she did a one-woman show called At Liberty. And she opens the show, obviously, with There's No Business Like Show Business.
Uh-huh.
But what she does with the lyrics, and everything is so personalized. And do you want me to tell you why?
Yes, I do want to tell you why.
Well, I discovered a double CD, and I was riveted. You know, it's the radio days. And then I saw the DVD. But also when I did a show with Roland Perrold quite a few years ago called Show and Tell. It was all about theater and acting. And blah, blah, blah.
I remember that well.
Oh, good. And thank you. I was looking for a particular to do with alcohol and to do with addictions that the theater folk and blah, 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 go through. And listening again to At Liberty, there was this wonderful monologue about all the different alcoholic beverages when she was an alcoholic. And, you know, she says she never went on stage without a friend, which was her alcohol. Am I digressing?
Not at all. Anyway,
she says, you know, old cowards, you know, for Sail Away. I mean, she says, well, Dom Perignon, you know, please. And Arthur Miller's bus stop, you know, vodka. But anyway, so I do love that entire At Liberty. And I thought it would be fun for people to hear how clever she is and dry.
Yeah. Well, it's like the prostitute once said. It's not the work, it's the stairs. The costumes. The costume designer for the musical company had me wear one white pearl earring and one gray pearl earring, and I do not know why. But I figured the part I played Joanne, she drank, so one night she just mixed them up. Later on in the run, however, I was told to wear my gray pearl earring on my downstage ear. The scenery. Curtain went up one night at the Music Box Theater on West 45th Street. I played the first scene of the play, Bus Stop with Phyllis Love. No laughs. Very strange. The stage manager had goofed. The curtain was up. The asbestos was down. The makeup. I hate it. I need it. The props. One night, the property man on some whodunit forgot to set a revolver underneath the husband's napkin. The husband was supposed to shoot the wife across the breakfast table. On cue, no revolver. The husband grabs a fistful of Schmucker's jam and shouts at his wife across the breakfast table, I'm going to kill you with this poison jelly. It's a great actor. It's a lousy prop man. The audience that lifts you when you're down, not in Three Indelicate Ladies in Boston, not in the Cinepat Muldoon in Wilmington, not in Dancing in the End Zone at the Coconut Grove Playhouse, not in Woman Bites Dog at the Wilbur Theater in Philadelphia, and not in I Found April at the Trinity Playhouse in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. To mention just a few. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops. Been there, done that, got all the t-shirts. The sheriff who escorts you out of town, well, not exactly out of town, but out of the Variety Club in Philadelphia in a flop, drunk and disorderly at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well.
The opening when your heart beats like a drum, I'll drink to that and did. The closing when the customers won't come. Shit. There's no business like show business. Like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere can you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. 1954, The Ed Sullivan Show. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, on our really big shoe, the shoe stopper from On Your Toes, Eileen Strick. At 18210 Birchcrest Drive in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan, my mother clicked off the television set and went upstairs to bed. I'll watch it when he gets her name right. My father watched alone. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Good for them. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't trade it for a sack of gold. Try me. You have it with you? Maybe you left it in the cab. Did you leave it in the cab? Yesterday, they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room, they've hung a star. There's good news and there's bad news. And there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is I have got a terrific acceptance speech for a Tony. The bad news is I've had it for 45 years. The good news is I want a Tony. The bad news is they cut the speech. Let's go. On with the... One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Let's get on with it. Why not get on with it? Scooby-dooby-dooby-dooby. Let's get on with the show. Why not?
True, there's no business like show business. Elaine Stritch there from At Liberty, and the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Michelle Maxwell. That really was a show business start, wasn't it?
I mean, the start of show, I mean, you know, follow that.
Well, there you are. Now we have to somehow. But Michelle, we've spoken about The Mousetrap. You're going to be appearing that from the 5th of December to the 19th of January. There you are, I got that right that time, at the Theatre on the Bay. And this is now real sort of theatre. And I was trying to think, you seem to do a fair amount of real theatre because I think of you as a cabaret artist, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. But just looking at what you've done, theatre, television, there's a lot of pure theatre without music, isn't there, in your life?
That's funny. Yeah, funnily enough, when I was thinking about this program, and then I thought, what actually have I in serious theatre done besides? And I've done some wonderful roles. You know, I think that Bill Flynn and the Tennessee Williams two-hander Outcry, that was 1974 at the space that sort of started it all.
Yeah.
And I've played Varia in The Cherry Orchard, and I've done Ellen Akebourne and Tom Stoppard, Jumpers, played Dottie, and Major Barbara, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and Linda Loman in Death of a Salesman.
Meaty stuff.
Very, very lucky to have played that. And of course, you know, us I say in the 70s, we were incredibly spoiled. When I look at what I did in the 1970s, it was nothing to do six amazing plays mm-hmm. in a year.
Yeah, gosh.
You know, now I'm so grateful. I've done 3 stage productions this year.
Oh.
But also I teach so and do a lot of dubbing and music gigs. So mm-hmm. it all balances.
No, you are very busy. And tell me a little bit more about your time that you spent in London, because you were there for most of the 1980s, weren't you?
Yes.
Working, presumably, in the world of theatre.
More in the world of music.
Okay.
That's really when I honed my singer-pianist and got me traveling all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a fair amount of theatre. I mean, the one that comes to mind is Poppy Nongena, where I played all the horrible white madams, and that played in the West End.
Yes.
Played a wonderful at Donmar Warehouse and Riverside Studios. And then when I got to London, that was with the South African production we did, which went to the Edinburgh Festival, and we got the festival first, and then we got called up by Ian Albury from the West End, and that was the first West End stint. It was very nice.
Gosh, it must have been very
exciting. It was very exciting.
And what an experience, Michelle, to have had those years in London.
Oh, based in London, because I did so much travelling.
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinary places.
Did you come back to South Africa happily? Were you ready to come back?
Well, what the irony was, as it is, I'd actually pretty much been cast in Tommy in the Anne Margaret role, which was playing, I think, at the Manchester Corn Exchange. My brain. And I got such a strong instinct to come back, and that my father died 6 months later. So
isn't it
there you go, you know. It's just so funny how life gets like Piccadilly Circus.
And, mm-hmm.
You know, that could have, you know, really been, but there you go.
But you were happy, as I say, you were happy to come
I'm
back
happy
nonetheless.
To be back.
And you then have had a marvelously successful career here, haven't you?
I had to catch up on the 80s. A lot happened with my compadres in the
indeed.
80s.
Gosh.
Also, you know, the government at the time was giving a lot of tax relief to films. So everybody was doing movies. And when I got back, everybody bought their house and got very established. So I did have to sort of start again. But that I went a lot into television.
Yes, you did. And I mean, a lot of people might know you as Bubbles from Essie Dingo. And what are some of the others that people just put a face to the name if they don't know what you look like, which they should do by now?
God, it's been around long enough. I suppose the last one was probably Scandal, where I played Abigail Martins. Or
oh, yes.
See if I can get this. La Casha.
Oh, well done.
Not so bad. Like Pasha. Yeah, Bibs and Bobs and Streaks and Fishy Fashions and, you know, Parts and Generations. And Issy Dingo was a wonderful part, Bubbles, as well. Mm-hmm.
Were you there for a while? Was it a part that ran for a while?
Mm.
And do you like television, the sort of sitcom thing?
You know, one always wishes one could do a really meaty role on screen.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, give me something that I could really be. Oh, please. But look, every genre that one does pulls out another aspect of you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a sort of 4 or 5 years in a television sitcom, it pulls out a part of you that has to be so disciplined.
Yes.
You know, you've got to prep those scripts on the weekend, you know. There's no ifs or buts or ands. You've got to be there on time. You've got to have a continuity in your head. So it demands another skill. And, of course, unfortunately, my face moves at the speed of light. You know, whatever I think is there. I'm not a great liar. So television
was tricky.
It was tricky. Television certainly helped me just calm my face and my muscles, and not to spring is bursting out all over with everything I say.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it, because there's such a sense of security.
There must be, especially for actors.
Financially,
who,
absolutely. Talk,
Michelle Maxwell is my guest. Michelle is appearing as Mrs. Boyle in Peter Tureen's production of The Mousetrap, Agatha Christie's masterpiece. Well, I'm not sure, but still, it's a fantastic
piece.
Pretty
up there.
I want to now, let's do a little chronological thing. Here it says you have a career spanning 45 years so far. That's a lifetime, Michelle.
It
has been a long career, hasn't it?
It has. And, you know, very recently we celebrated the Matrix of 1968, and with quite a few celebrations and people coming from all over the world, and realizing that I've been out of school for 50 years was even more profound than turning whatever it is that I've turned, which is past that. But, and it made me actually, because we were obviously looking for photographs and interviews and little, and it made me actually take stock of what I've actually done. Mm-hmm. You know, not that that's good, bad, or indifferent, but no, it was quite a lot. Yes. It's good to take stock.
You know, when we spoke about the theatre roles you've done, the pure theatre, not musicals, and then there's your music side, which came first, looking right back? I mean, how did it all begin?
I started off doing a BA Muzz.
Oh, did you?
And I was just an atrocious student. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. I was atrocious. Because I'd been in boarding school for so many years that I think I came out and I just... You know, the world and the thing, and I was on USAS, and I just wasn't everything going. And my bent, even when I was at school, I did music from a trick. It was always, you know, I did a Mendelssohn a prelude and fugue for my exams. For example, I loved Debussy, I liked Poulenc. I was always drawn, actually, to music with interesting chords and interesting rhythms. Mm-hmm. You know, I did the Gershwin Three Preludes, you know, that kind of thing. And, so I did BA Muzz, and I knew at that time, it's so funny because I've now, I do teach music, which is so ironic, but I realized I wasn't going to be a music teacher and I wasn't going to be a concert pianist, and I loved jazz. I just loved those sounds, and I'd already discovered Bill Evans then, and then I was really bad, and very ashamedly I'm ashamed of it that I swapped to drama. Because I didn't stay the course and I didn't break through the pain barrier of my...
of your BMAS.
The pain barrier of my... So, yeah, and then when I was at drama school, I started writing music for the productions that we were doing, and even through to the Space Theatre I was working on.
You were very involved with the Space,
yeah,
weren't you?
Early Space, 1974 I joined, uh-huh. Which was...
What a time that must have been.
Oh, to watch Yvonne at work, and you know, and that's what...
You know, Yvonne Briceland.
Yvonne Briceland, yes. Mm. You know, us that came from that period, we're so used to doing everything in theatre that we sort of drive people mad. We look at lighting and think, costumes, we think, and I remember that Yvonne Briceland in Glass Menagerie, can you imagine? I mean, she was just extraordinary. And I worked lights. And the lights were these, what you've got now, Mwanda, with the faders. It was just so sensitive and so gorgeous. So watching Yvonne every night was just phenomenal, and doing the lights and recording music for it. Yeah.
And the voice, Michelle, because one of your great claims to fame is your lovely voice, especially with the jazz that you do. And well, I remember sitting in a very intimate venue watching you perform with a keyboard, and your voice and the things you did with your mouth for percussion effects, and it was wonderful. So did the voice, was that naturally there, or did you have training?
The voice, yes, had very various forms of singing training, but I never went anywhere near the classical route. Mm-hmm. So I rather sort of, I hope it doesn't sound too self-deprecating.
Deprecating.
One of those words. Yes. That, you know, I see myself really as a, not as a singer, but I do sing, obviously. But I, it's more telling a story with a thing.
An entertainer, sort of.
Yeah, probably an entertainer. But I mean, I was head of choir at school and all of that. I always had a deep voice because we discovered that I had tonsil regrowth, and then when they discovered that. You know, to hell with it. The operation when you get older is so unspeakably painful.
Yes, I know.
I thought, I'll just sound husky. It's fine. Yes, you know, I teach singing, and I'm probably a better teacher than I am a singer, but I...
You teach jazz singing, presumably.
No. Look, you know, the thing is, living in Cape Town, you say the word jazz, you know, and I see the great edifice of the Jazz College, and I think, you know, who am I? You know, what no? We grew up with listening and taking it down and going to jazz clubs. So I'm not a school musician, but I have to say that almost all my boyfriends have been jazz musicians, and I'm a quick studier in that way. If it's hands-on, I can really learn. So, and I've listened a lot. So I could not say that I'm a jazz singer, but I definitely have a jazz sensibility and a great sense of rhythm and chordal and sounds. Yeah. Yes,
it seems to that chordal thing has come up a few times. The sort of so that's obviously quite special for you. And of course, one forgets, although we shouldn't, that you are in fact a composer as well. You compose your own stuff. A lot of your stuff is composed by you.
So long ago, it breaks my heart. But yeah, a long, long time ago. I still arrange, you know, and also the students I have, obviously I arrange their songs. And there's one particular student that I've helped compose with her, and we're recording that. So it's there, but life has unfortunately whipped me up and gone slightly into the survival mentality, which is not a good place to be.
But it's a place one needs to be, I suppose.
Yes.
Now, let's do another track of music, Michelle. John Coltrane and Johnny Hartman, Lush Life. What's that all about?
Okay.
This I'm ready.
I'm ready. So am I, because I have a little sigh. This takes me back to the very early 1970s. And Merton Barrow, hymn of Salam, Merton, extraordinary, of the Jazz Workshop, and a very important mentor in my early sort of jazz listening days. Every Saturday, he hosted jam sessions at his house. He then lived in Fresno, I think. And that is where I learned Lush Life. I must have been all of 1920, I don't know, something like that, long time ago. And it's such a tricky, it's a Billy Strayhorn song, and it's such a tricky song, but it just was perfect for me, because it marries my acting and my music and my sense of lyrics and storytelling really. And Lush Life is just, it was one of the first big jazz standards that I learned at Merton Barrow's feet in the early 1970s. It was very special.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come what may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew had sad and sullen gray faces with distant hair traces that used to be there. You could see where they'd been washed away by too many through the day 12 o'clock tales. Then you came along with your siren song to tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your poignant smile was tinged with the sadness of a great love for me. Ah, yes, I was wrong again. And only last year, everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again, a trough full of hearts. Could only be a bore, a week in Paris. Please, the bite of it, all I care is to smile in spite of it. I'll forget you, I will, while yet you are still burning inside my brain. Romance is much, stifling those who strive. I'll live a lush life in some small dive, and there I'll be while I rot with the rest of those whose lives are lonely too. Mm-hmm.
John Coltrane and Johnny Hartman there, and a track called Lush Life. Mm. Well, you gave it a lovely introduction, Michelle, so we were all prepared for that. Michelle Maxwell is my guest, the, trying to think what to call you now, the singer, entertainer, jazz singer, actor.
My mother used to say, darling, you are an artist. Very difficult. She was also an actress, by the way. So
your mother, under what
Nanette
name?
Nanette Rennie. And my grandfather, Gordon Rennie. They were sort of London, Scotland, and came out after the war.
Were you born here, Michelle,
South
Africa?
Yes.
In Johannesburg?
In Cape Town.
Oh, so Cape Town is in fact your home.
It is.
I know you live here now, but you spent some time in Johannesburg, didn't
yeah,
you?
And the 80s of the country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so Mom, interesting enough for Mrs. Boyle, I just hear those diphthongs and the sounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You said something quite interesting to me when we were just having a cup of tea before the interview, where we were talking about accents, because you were showing off your Jewish accent, for example. And you said something very interesting, how when you do accents, you really have to, it's got to be in your psyche. It can't just be your throat. You've got to get into character, your whole body, which I perhaps had never thought of before, because I can't do accents. But anyway.
I'm sure you could.
No, I can't. I really can't. I mentioned a Jewish accent there, but apparently you do draw on your Jewish heritage quite a lot. You've done a number of Jewish plays for Peter Turin, for example.
Indeed. Wonderful characters.
And proudly so. You say you've reveled in the ribald, colorful characters one can create within the Jewish world, so to speak.
Well, look, I am half Jewish on my father's side, Ronnie Maxwell. He was also big in advertising in this country, but that's another story. And I did grow up in Seapoint, so I mean, you know, boing boing boing, as you did. But I mean, that is that accent, which is not that at all. But the it's to do with, I don't know, being, when you play those characters, there's nothing shy about it.
Yeah.
It's in your body, it's in your gestures, it's in your whole being, you know, and out it comes.
Gosh.
But Peter, I mean, they were fantastic roles. You know, if I think of Family Secrets, which was a one-woman production, five characters playing the father, the mother, the grandmother, et cetera.
Fabulous. Beau Geste
with Michael DePinna. We played husband and wife.
Oh gosh!
But that was more American. It was.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't so Jewish. But in the Family Secrets, the 85-year-old grandmother was very Jewish. Very. She was like that, you know.
The other thing I saw on your biography here is the Out of the Shadows Festival, because I remember interviewing on this very program the man who was involved with that, and how this festival was coming and how all this music had been discovered in the concentration camps and elsewhere. And you were involved with that, weren't you?
I'm so glad you know about that. Of course you would know about it. I mean, it's Rodney Hello.
No,
but nobody said it was the most extraordinary festival. to have been involved with. And I was in the play section, which Aviva Pelham directed, called The Comedy of Us Jews. And this was a play discovered in Finland, which I have a great affinity for because I've worked there a lot. And this was a play discovered after the war, obviously, all these hidden treasures. Mm. And at the time, there were a lot of tailors in Finland, and it was set in a clothing factory, and how they were rationed, and they had to have the punch cards. I mean, I'm thrilling as we talk about it. And we performed that in the synagogue, which was so wonderful.
It was, by all accounts, an extraordinary festival. And it sort of continues, doesn't it? Because they're still discovering music. They're still
discovering the man plays, was telling me, yes, art.
All that. And he's got connections now all around the world, the person I interviewed, feeding him information, the various people that go out. It was an amazing thing. So it's so nice to know that you were involved with that.
Yes.
Let's have another piece of music, Michelle. What are we going to have this time?
Well, I think we're going to go back to the early 1990s. And when I discovered this piece, it's called The Gershwin Connection, Dave Grusin, wonderful pianist, arranger. And shall I tell you how I found it?
Yes, please, please.
I was asked to play Mame in East London, following in the footsteps of Judy Page, Joan Brickell. In fact, I had to wear Judy's costume, which is so funny because, I mean, our bodies are totally different. Anyway, moving along. And in East London, I was desperate to have a piece of music, and I found a cassette of this. And also at the time, my boyfriend at the time had come down to stay with me. So it was all full of love and Mame, which actually it's Mame and her dresser is actually how the role of Mame should be described.
Ah, okay.
Because you change every 2 minutes, yes, and you can only change at the side of the stage. So but it was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful role to play, Mame Dennis.
And now I'm intrigued to know how this ties up with Dave Grusin.
I'm so sorry, and maybe I didn't make it clear, but while I was in East London doing Mame,
this is where you discovered the cassette.
I bought it at the CNA, the cassette of Dave Grusin, The Gershwin Connection.
Okay. And you've chosen
And I was in love at the time as well, so it was all a lovely gemushk.
Our love is here to stay.
Our love is here to stay.
Thank you.
Dave Grusin from the Gershwin Connection. That was called Our Love Is Here to Stay. Michelle Maxwell's choice. Why are you laughing, Michelle?
I don't know. You're making me smile.
Good. In just the few minutes we have left, yes, because time races by when you're having fun, as yes, I'm sure you well know.
Oh.
You mentioned MAME there, but you've done quite a few of the big musicals. You've done Cabaret, Fraulein Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
You've done Funny Girl, Guys and Dolls. Do you enjoy those big sort of in-your-face Broadway musicals?
I do. You know, there's always the acting scenes in between that are always kind of a problem, you know, unless you... the acting scenes are generally sort of the last things that get worked on because you've got the choreography and there's so much in it. But I do love being in a musical, obviously, because it has all the elements that I love.
The acting and the singing.
And I mean, yeah, Guys and Dolls is wonderful and playing Miss Adelaide, you know.
But didn't you get an award or you were nominated for Cabaret?
Yes, I was nominated.
Oh, good for you.
Yes, thank you.
So, Michelle, you're busy. You're a busy lady because The Mousetrap, you're in The Mousetrap now. Yes. And I think you said it goes to Johannesburg.
Yes. And then after that, we go to New Zealand, which
is going
to be fantastic.
Have you been there before?
I've never been there. I've worked in Australia, but I've never been to New Zealand.
It's Peter Turina really gets his. Yeah. He's got these far-flung connections, hasn't he?
New Zealand's, I think it's, I might be wrong, but I think it's a relatively recent new
contact for him.
Yeah. But I mean, Peter, I mean, just look at the different genres of what he's bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
Very special.
And then when that's finished, what does Michelle Maxwell do when you put away your Mrs. Boyle?
What do the simple folk do? when I put aside Mrs. Boyle, look, all in the pipeline. I'm hoping that a pilot I did for a television series, which would be, you know, many episodes of it, might have come through by then.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, I've just done a term teaching piano and theory at AFTA, sitting in for someone. So, you know, I might bibs and bobs around and carry on teaching, dubbing.
And you enjoy teaching, Michelle?
I do.
Because it is a gift, isn't it? Just because you're an actor or a musician doesn't necessarily mean to say you can teach.
It's not just teaching the nuts and bolts of it. The whole person walks into the room.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes a lot of areas of yourself that are triggered that you didn't even realize that you would be helping or sharing. It's full on.
And when, you know, I always like to ask my guests how they relax, because a lot of the guests I have are working quite intensely,
yes,
either as traveling conductors or musicians or actors, yes, or playwrights. And do you listen to a lot of music? You mentioned earlier some classical music. Do you listen at home?
I do. I listen to rock. I listen to Latin. I listen to wonderful singer-pianists, Eliane Elias, who's coming to the Jazz Festival, and I don't think I'll be here. You know, Shirley Horn, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I do listen. I listen to classical. I also listen a lot to FMR. There you are. I mean, say no more. You know.
Oh, well, then you can stay.
I intersperse between that and Cape Talk to get my drift of what's going on and
yes,
then to relax. Also, I do meditate. Not as every single day as I used to, but I find that I can just, even in any crowded space, I can just go zinc and I'm away,
mm-hmm,
for a little bit. I can, as I say, zone out.
And that helps. It does.
And also,
good for
you know, all our things that actors do, a bit of Alexander and stretching and Pilates and bibs and bobs of everything, actually.
Right. Yeah. Gosh, Michelle, it's been quite sort of infectious talking to you because of your energy and your enthusiasm and your humor and the number of things you've done. So it's been fun.
Thank you.
But now you're going to end something rather sad.
Funnily enough, with the very capable hands of Herbie Hancock, because this is from his it's called the Imagine Project, and he's taken a lot of very interesting songs with good lyrics or have an emotional content, and he's of course done his inimitable arranging. And this arrangement of Imagine, John Lennon's Imagine, features Pink, India Ari and Jeff Beck is a guitarist. And it's a moving song, but the way he's got it has such an internal energy, and it's almost African in the sense of his rhythms. So it's very moving. I love it.
And this is how you're going to say goodbye.
I'd love to end on that. Yes.
But Michelle, it's been great talking to you. I can't wait to see you as Mrs. Boyle. And we won't say who did it.
No.
And enjoy the show in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and New Zealand.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we'll catch up with you again sometime.
Be nice.
Michelle, it's been great talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
It's the return of a Christie for Christmas as Peter Turin presents Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, in which West End star Mark Winter heads a cast of unusual suspects. Cut off by the snow, the guests uncover a murderer. Who can it be? From the 5th of December to the 19th of January, come and see why The Mousetrap is still the West End's longest-running play. Suspect everyone. Book your seats today, only at Theatre on the Bay.